Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rucka. Today we're discussing homelessness with Teresa Barnes, the Executive Director of the Astoria Warming Center. So welcome, Teresa. Thanks for coming to share what you know.
Appreciate that. Roger. Thanks so much for having me here. It's good to be here.
I can remember many times this past winter when I was very glad to get out of the cold and wet and get into a nice warm house. And that's not an option for people who are homeless. And that's where you step in.
I was hired under an Oregon Health Authority grant. And so we had, you know, in the past, the Warming Center hasn't always even had a budget to pay people. We've had volunteers like you and Jan and, you know, just a lot of amazing community members who have been, you know, our foundation. That's how we've run is, you know, people that wanted to help out their, you know, other vulnerable members of the community. And so it was awesome that we had a staff that, you know, we had the ability to pay people for their time. And one of, you know, I was told that I could stay on. People have to leave the Warming Center at 8 a.m. and usually cleaning lasts till 9. But I was told I could stay till 10 and help connect people to resources, which was one of my first realizations that like, there just aren't a ton of resources, you know, that I think that we like to believe that that was something that's that important, was something as basic as where you live, where you exist in the world, that somebody's on that, that there's just no way that we're sending out the elderly or mothers or children or veterans or, you know, like, that, oh, there's somebody's got to be on that. There's got to be some place for these people to go. And I appreciate that you say so frequently that there isn't, that people just desperately need to know like where they are allowed to exist, you know? And so I think that in my time as, you know, from a staff member to being asked to serve as the executive director in an interim capacity, and then eventually getting hired for it, the whole experience has just been incredibly humbling. You know, I think that it's been a real eye opener for me that how much we focus on individuals, individual people or individual organizations as opposed to systems, you know, and that it's so easy. It was easy for me to look at what other people were doing and see how it needed to be done differently. And it's so much more difficult to do it right yourself, you know, and when the fundamental issue is that there's just not a place for people to go to exist and to sleep, there's just really no way around that, you know. We just keep doing all of these, like, you know, labyrinthine workarounds, and it's like someone has to just be the person to tell people, I'm sorry, there's nowhere for you to go, and that's really, really hard. You know, our center coordinator this past season, Billy, would say that we're a Band-Aid on a bullet wound, you know, and while we're one of the longer running warming centers in the state, apparently, which in some ways is encouraging, it's also like kind of indicative of the fact that a temporary emergency shelter is supposed to be that temporary and for emergency purposes. We're not a long-term solution to homelessness. In my mind, and I say this with all due respect to the Warming Center, which is an organization I'm running and I love, you know, that we are what a lack of a solution to homelessness looks like. We are what it looks like when you don't have a coordinated collective effort to do something more substantive about the issue. You know, and so we are operating well outside of what a traditional warming center would do. We are offered showers and laundry and meals, a ton of like personal hygiene supplies. We bought get boots for our guests. You know, I mean, we're really pushing the limits of what you can do with a temporary seasonal shelter. And so we would need more than just money to turn into a year-round shelter. We would need support in all of the ways that can look like, you know. We don't have trained mental health care or healthcare workers on our staff. We would just need so much more to actually just be the year-round place that everyone can exist who doesn't have it. Another thing that, I mean, this can kind of get us off into a whole other topic, but I do think that when you hear a lot of people that are really upset about the increased presence of unhoused people downtown, you know, that are upset about the siting of certain locations and social service providers. And I do think that it's really important to remember that these locations aren't happening in a vacuum. Again, this is what it looks like when there is a lack of a coordinated response, a lack of collaboration amongst government and service providers. And so, you know, like I know that there, you know, that the people who are doing service providing downtown didn't want to end up there. That was after a number of better locations were suggested. I know that, you know, that that there's a concern about there being permanent supportive housing downtown. And so what I keep trying to take the focus back to is that we don't have to be enemies because we disagree on the location for this, you know, but that it's, I want people to suggest different options, you know, that this, that people are ending up where they are because of being kept from being any other place.
There's a sense in the community that the numbers of homeless people keep increasing. What is your take on that? What are you seeing at the Warming Center, and what about where did they come from?
That's a great question. Well, you know, I thought that it was very interesting and that there was an interview with Officer Kenny Hansen, and where he was asked that question by the historian, and he mentioned that, you know, a big part of the reason that there's so much more of an unhoused presence downtown is because of the sweeps that drove people out of the woods.
Right.
And so I think that it... I think that it's really important. I really appreciated that acknowledgement that even those of us who are trying to do that are all using our limited toolbox to do what we can, that that there are unintended consequences. And I kind of feel like homelessness as an issue could really be summed up as just like an accumulation of unintended consequences, you know? And so when you drive people out of the woods, they have to go somewhere. When you remove people from their cars, they have to go somewhere. When you remove people from camping spots, they go somewhere. And so what I've really been trying to find out in my talks with Chief Spaulding and my talks with people that are, you know, when we're talking about these ordinances to work around the anti-camping bills or the camping bills like House Bill 3115, what I don't hear is a long-term solution to where people go. And even if this is not about, even if you don't care, you know, I feel like that there's this frustration that police will be paying for this or that the taxpayers will be funding this. And what I don't hear is an acknowledgement that the taxpayers are already funding this. You know, our current response to homelessness is one of the most expensive ways to respond to homelessness. Your taxpayer money is already going to this issue. Wouldn't it make more sense economically for it to go to this issue in a targeted way that actually worked toward a solution?
Who are, and I think I kind of know the answer to this, but I want to hear your take on it. Who are the people who are homeless? Who are the people that you're seeing at the Warming Center? Where are they coming from? What's the background?
Well, I think that, you know, one something that came up at the forum last week is that there is a definite perception that that the unhoused in Astoria are being bused in from somewhere, that they're not really from here, they're not real Astorians. And as Viviana said, I feel like that is a myth about homelessness. And it's a very, very long-standing myth about homelessness, you know, that this goes back to the origins of social work and undesirables, you know, that there's always a perception that they're coming from somewhere else, be it another country or another town. And the reality is that most of the people who are unhoused in our community are from our community. They are from this area. They are from this county, at least from this state. And I think that, you know, as far as the people that are coming into the Warming Center, we're sort of the last stop, you know. that people that have other options aren't going to necessarily choose to sleep in a place, sleep on the floor with a bunch of other adults, you know?
Right.
It's not ideal. And so I think that we definitely see a disproportionate amount of people who are just extremely vulnerable, whether it's due to their mental health, whether it's due to, you know, being on substance. I mean, there are just so often, you know, that combination of being neurodivergent, on substance, and unhoused. It's a really, really hard barrier. There's just so much stacked against you at that point that it becomes extremely difficult to just add housing into the mix. And then just, you know, even if we had housing, I mean, I know people that have robust mental health and a good job and education and really struggle to find housing in this town. So when you're starting at zero, it's kind of like if you're trying to buy a car without selling another car, you know. Yeah. When you're not moving out of one apartment into another apartment, you don't have that security deposit that you can use from your one place to put to the next place. You're talking about thousands of dollars to get into even a studio apartment. And that's a lot for all of us who don't have barriers against us, you know?
And that cost has risen really dramatically in the past couple of years. It's just skyrocketed. Let me ask you about from your perspective, what do you see as solutions? There's no one fix for this, but what are some of the things we should be doing that we're not doing?
Well, I think that's something that keeps coming up that, I mean, I've had guests at the Warming Center come to me with very detailed plans about storage. You've talked about this. I've talked about this. I'm going to bring it up at the Homelessness Solutions Task Force meeting. It's just so basic that people have belongings. You do, I do. Most of us have homes and cars and multiple different places that we can put our things. That's like just a basic part of being human is that we have stuff and I have to have places to put our stuff. You know, I had a lot of really in-depth talks with one of our guests last season who was trying to find a job, and he just didn't understand why he couldn't leave his stuff at the Warming Center, because there is an hour between when the Warming Center closed and Filling Empty Bellies opened up. And he's like, I can't bring my stuff to a job interview with me, right? You know? So, I mean, that's a way that not having storage really directly impacts people's employment prospects. But also, we have people that are frail, that have like physical, you know, they have health issues that prevent them from carrying their things around. And I just think that that's just such a basic, you know, it just seems like a very concrete ask that we could respond to. It doesn't require like a huge amount of like radical rethinking of our current systems to figure out just a storage spot. That's definitely one part of it. I feel like that the part that does require the radical rethinking of systems and a higher level of collaboration than I'm currently seeing is all of the different varieties of housing, you know? So I kind of see it almost as like that you need places like the Warming Center. You absolutely need a place where if you're evicted, if you are facing any kind of like tragic emergency, you have a place that you can go tonight. I think that we also need a year-round shelter because even if we're just doing this based on the idea that people can die in extreme weather, I think anyone who lives in Astoria is well aware that our bad weather is not limited to between November and March.
Right.
So I think we need a year-round shelter. I think we need transitional housing. I think we need permanent supportive housing, you know, and that this is not something that any one organization can bottom line. This is, you know, going to take a variety of tactics. I was also pretty encouraged by the city talking about sanctioned camping areas. I bring up the book Tent City Urbanism a lot because it kind of talks about that, you know, that as being a legitimate solution to to our issues, you know? I mean, and I know that people are very, very afraid. You hear it come up a lot, that people don't want to be the next Portland. Oh, we don't want to be like Portland. So I think it's really important to realize that Astoria has the, our area has the highest rate of homelessness in this state. We are separate from Portland, or different than Portland, in the sense that we are smaller than Portland, not in that Portland has more homeless people per capita than we do, you know? And so I think that it's, again, that, you know, people are here and people are existing. Unless there's some sort of plan to move everyone out of here, which I don't think is constitutional or moral, then what are we gonna do about the people in our community who are living here? If there is no spot for them to go to, they are allowed to camp. And so do we want to have that be in a sanctioned place so that people can have some level of like dignity and autonomy? You know, that I think this idea of camp sites as being this lawless land of, you know, violent criminal activity really is counter to how these work. I mean, I think that they require so much self-governance that you really see that when people who are unhoused make the rules for themselves, they make much stricter rules than I would make. I mean, I was reading about one that was like, no spitting, no smelling bad, you know? I mean, most people wanna live in comfortable circumstances where they feel safe. And when we see people that aren't doing that, it's not because that's what they want. It's because their options are limited.
You know, the warming center is an example of what you're talking about. Often at the warming center, there may be one or two staff members present, often women. And it's safe because the people who are using that facility are very protective of you. Really, because they appreciate very much having a place to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. We've definitely had, I mean, it's super hard to balance people's needs for safety. Letting everyone in means that some people aren't going to feel safe, you know? So, I mean, we are very, very, very aware of the fact that when we kick people or we ask people to leave the warming center, that is putting someone out on the street. And so we do that very, very sparingly. And, you know, I've found often that guests are rushing in to like, don't you talk to Teresa that way, you know? So they're protective of me and I'm protective of them. And I mean, for the most part, people are just, they're coming to get away from that, you know? Sure. But it's a definite struggle. It's very hard when you're after going through this season to see that all of a sudden people are like, let's fund you, let's get you open year round. I'm like, oh my gosh, like it is so hard to ask to find people in the community who are willing to do seasonal on-call low-paid work, you know? It's much easier to just assume that if you just throw more money at the problem, then that solves it. And there's just a whole, you know, it's a different order of magnitude to exist year-round. People want to have ownership over their space. And that's really difficult when, you know, people just have cots. You know, people view a residence type setting differently than they view just like a mat on the floor.
As you look at housing and what we should be doing in housing, how do you envision that? Would that be a situation where you would have sort of a collective kind of housing with services involved, or how would that best work, do you think, based on your experience?
Well, you know, I mean, I feel like that personally, I kind of like the vibrancy, you know, the allowing of of communities to be built more organically. You know, I had to, I'm in school for social work right now. And so I had to, for my advocacy for policy change class, find a policy that I thought should be changed around housing. And so when you actually have to boil it down to this very specific thing, I think that in my experience at the Warming Center, what I've seen is that, you know, land use, zoning laws, that a lot of this stuff that was originally intended to keep people safe, to kind of to make sure that slumlords couldn't just be forcing people to live in unsanitary conditions, that it's really kind of at some point it became less about direct safety needs and more sort of about maybe maintaining the status quo. So I'm certainly not suggesting that all building codes and zoning regulations, I think zoning is really important, you know, but I think that, you know, what I would really see is a return to this, the idea that if this code or this regulation isn't directly impacting safety, let's take a look at it, you know, in the same way that we've talked about ADUs, accessory dwelling units changing. You know, I mean, I just think that unconventional thinking, that's kind of what we need. And also it just allows us, I mean, I personally love the idea and it feels so much more dignified to me to think of people who are unhoused having a level of autonomy, being able to govern themselves. Mm-hmm. I feel deeply uncomfortable with being a housed person who is deciding what other people's lives should look like. And I think that, you know, I've been humbled in my job, kind of from the macro perspective, looking at myself in the midst of these bigger systems and realizing how little power I have, but also from the guest of the Warming Center. I was talking to the guy actually who had come to me with the great storage idea. And I was saying something about solving homelessness, which is now like a little cringy to me that I said this to him. And he's like, we don't need you to solve homelessness. But he's like, I live in my van and it's fine. I just want a place to, for my friends to put their stuff. You know, and so I think when we put our own values and vision of what to us looks like safety and what to us looks like comfort on other people who we don't know, we get this very, you know, the homeless population, they're not a monolith, you know, right. It's not everybody. And there are the traditional, you know, this whole idea of deserving versus undeserving poor goes back to the origins of social work. And so there are, you know, I've been talking with a mom. She has three children and she is unhoused and she got my number and is talking to me. She's called me on Sunday and was riding the bus back and forth from here to Seaside so that her and her family could stay warm. And I can tell you that it is extremely difficult to talk to someone in that position and tell them that there's nowhere that they can go.
Yeah.
And on the other side of it, you know, there are people that are addicted to drugs. There are people that are, you know, quote unquote, undeserving, and they also live here and they also need somewhere to be, you know, and if people don't have their needs met, that seems so much more long-term damaging, not just to them, but to the people that they live with, you know? So, I mean, I feel like the homeless population, you know, that's everybody. And so I don't want to get into the thing of like thinking that just because this person meets our standards of who deserves to get help, you know, housing is a right. And it impacts us all when we don't extend that right to those in our community.
Well, it's true. And the people who often are acting out and so on are people who have mental issues. And that's certainly not something they asked for.
Yeah.
It's something that it's an illness like any other. Do you have any thoughts about getting to that point where we do have, or we are able to house people who need housing? Who all needs to be involved in that? I think it's a bigger problem than any single entity, is it not?
Yeah, I learned the term collective impact in one of my classes last term. And I wrote an article in the HipFish about it because I was like, I think that there was some part that was talking about how the collective impact process can take years. And often what's required is that you have to just have all the actors in a room talking, and they might be talking for a really long time before anything happens. And I was just like, oh my God, it's homelessness. It's the host meetings. It's all of these things, you know, all this criticism has been thrown at those meetings about, you know, not having more tangible solutions. But when I saw it through the lens of that this is a dialogue, and it takes time for us to all get on the same page about what needs to be done. I mean, I definitely think that something that I've been wanting to do is, you know, just have all of just the service providers, you know, knowing very specifically who's offering what. I mean, the woman that I was speaking with had been recommended to the warming center from another service and like provider in the area, that we could help with resources, you know? And I was like, wait, like we can't help with things that you can't help with. We're not even open right now. So I think that us all getting on the same page about who's offering what is really helpful, and then seeing where the gaps are. You know, I think that if, you know, for instance, if Lifeboat is going to do a shelter or a warming center, then perhaps the warming center could do something different. You know, that I don't think that we need a redundancy in certain services so much as we need to make sure that all of the bases are covered. And that's going to take a lot of work. I mean, I think that at the very least, we're talking about the city, the county, all of the service providers who are working directly with the unhoused population. And I think that, you know, there needs to be that. I also really see there being kind of a campaign or a public relations campaign. I feel like there's just so much misinformation that is spread about solutions to in our community, about what they would look like. You know, I was asked to help select questions at the Community Livability Forum last week. Mm-hmm. And I found that a lot of the questions are just coming from this place. This is like this, the concern with people getting handouts, mm-hmm. you know, that who's going to pay for this. And like I mentioned earlier, that without really acknowledging that, like, we're currently paying for this, mm-hmm. with no end in sight. I mean, so I think that there are, you know, there are so many experts out there that know about housing, that know how to how to tap into the bigger state money and federal money. The idea of having a tiny home village, the idea of having a permanent year-round shelter, the idea of having a long-term camping spot.
We've been talking about homelessness with Teresa Barnes, the executive director of the Astoria Warming Center. This is The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. Thanks for listening.